At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Today's episode is definitely different than anything we've ever done before.
Yeah.
First and foremost, because one, it's spooky season. And if you are into spooky things, you probably are nerd enough to know that The Exorcist remake is actually out in theaters today. This episode will be airing on Friday the 13th in October. And we are actually doing our first interview. We probably won't be doing a lot of interviews because that's not really our format. We prefer, well, I wouldn't say we prefer, but we normally tell stories and have banter. Yeah. But on today's episode, we have a very special guest, Bishop James Long. If you're not familiar with him, you will be after today's episode.
Yes.
He has performed over 30 exorcisms, documented exorcisms during his career. And he's been on, numerous shows with the paranormal. He has done tons of paranormal investigations and just has a wealth of knowledge to share about exorcists, the exorcist perspective, experiences he's had, the difference between shadow people and poltergeists and cursed objects. And so we're going to dig into all of that.
Yes. And we're trying to take a little bit more of a unique approach with our questions. We're trying to not just ask the normal. We really want to dig in and see, how many people know that there are different types of possession? How many people know the difference between a possession and a poltergeist and what it means when you have a poltergeist? We're looking to dig in deep, and there's a reason for that. So he's got the knowledge, and we're going to ask.
We're going to get the answers. So this episode of Macabre is Exorcism Exposé with Bishop James Long.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. This should be good.
Hello, Bishop.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi.
You made
How are you?
Yeah.
Are you having any technical difficulties like we are?
No, not at all. It's just my schedule is really crazy. Literally, I've been since 4 o'clock this morning. So,
oh my goodness,
I'm so sorry.
It's all right. It's all right. We're all good. So I'm just.
Well, what we're planning on doing is, because we value your time, is we're going to pre-record all of your intro stuff. We pulled your bio information from the website. So as long as you're okay with us doing that, and we'll do that on the front end.
Awesome.
And then that way we can literally just kind of dive into some questions that we have for you, and Blair's going to kick us off and we're just going to get right into it if that's okay with you.
Yeah, good deal.
Bishop, thank you so much for joining us. We know that your schedule is crazy busy and we really appreciate you having you on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
We have a lot of questions for you. So we have a lot. So hopefully we can cover all of them. We definitely wanted to try to take a little different approach. We know that you've been on a lot of shows, so we wanted to take a different direction. We kind of wanted to start with talking about some common misconceptions. with religious and / secular demonology, exorcisms. So what is the difference?
A difference in, I'm sorry, what was it? Demonology and exorcisms?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, demonology is the study of demons and of course their origins. And now the exorcism is what is a rite that is performed when an individual is undergoing the stage of possession, or in the case of a demonic infestation. So under what's called oppression, then you pray a prayer of deliverance. So demonology is actually the study. There's a lot of people claiming to be demonologists in the paranormal community that concerns me, because many people who claim to be demonologists have never really worked a demonic case, and they watch a lot of YouTube videos, and now they're telling people they're demonologists. That's very concerning to me, because you cannot separate theology from demonology. And I've said this for over 20 years, two decades. Demonology is not paranormal. Demonology is theological. Mm-hmm. And if one does not understand that, then that person has no business calling themselves a demonologist. You cannot remove theology from the study of demonology. So that's very important to explain. And of course, a demonologist, you know, you have what's called a religious demonologist and laity, and just a secular demonologist. So, well, if you're a religious demonologist, you've devoted your entire life to this calling to take cases on, and of course, then work with clergy if it warrants that type of attention. And so it's a calling. It's not something you do because you're bored on a Friday night. It's something that you are truly called to absolutely do this ministry. It's not, it chooses you. God chooses you. You don't choose it.
Mm-hmm. It seems like it would be a very risky thing for someone to do that is not well-trained and has the religious backing to be able to arm themselves in situations that they are not at all prepared for.
Well, yeah, because matter of fact, it's in Scripture, in Acts chapter 19, verse 13 through 16. It is the sons of Sceva. And basically, they were running around, and they were claiming to be exorcists and performing exorcisms on people and saying, "I adjure you by the name of Jesus and Paul who proclaims," and this kind of thing. But the demonic answered them, and because they came across a real case, and the demon said to them, "You know, Jesus I know, and Paul I recognize, but who are you?" Mm-hmm. And then attacked these men severely, to the point that, I mean, leaped on them, mastered them, overpowered them, and they actually fled out of the house naked and wounded.
Yeah, definitely not something that you want to be messing around with.
Yeah,
and keep in mind, a demonologist, this is really important, a demonologist is not the same thing as an exorcist. Mm-hmm. So a demonologist can be laity. Now, by my office as an exorcist, I'm a demonologist by that right. But a demonologist has no business performing the sacred rite because they have no faculties to do so. So a demonologist is not an individual that should be going around performing sacred rites that are reserved strictly for an exorcist. And I think that's what a lot of people, especially in the paranormal community, think, well, because I'm a demonologist, I can perform sacred rites. No, you can't. You have no faculties to do so. And so therefore, it's very dangerous to call yourself a demonologist and then performing solemn rite of exorcism with no training. That's something that should be avoided, and it's not being avoided. It's actually just the opposite. And I find that to be very troubling.
Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing that to light too. That's definitely something we wanted to share with our listeners.
Yeah.
Now, from your understanding, and Blair, feel free to jump in if you have a question. How do you actually determine that you are in fact dealing with a demon? What does that process look like?
Well, it's extensive. It's not something that happens overnight. And I have people telling me all the time, you know, "I'm possessed. I need you to perform an exorcism now." And I tell them, I don't perform them on command. That doesn't happen. And so, and it shouldn't. And anyone who does do that really could do some very serious damage to the person's psychological issue if the person's struggling with psychological issues. So, for example, someone contacts me and says, "Look, I think we're having some either a demonic infestation in the homes. We're having activity. It's violent. We're scared. We're frightened." So what I'll do is I'll work with a team within that area who've been in the field for a long time. You know, I've been in the paranormal field for 35 years, 35. And when I went public with my ministry, there was no Catholic clergy helping the paranormal, none. I was it. I was the first paranormal Catholic clergy to go public with my ministry to help the paranormal community. There was me and Father Andrew Calder. And Andy mm-hmm. was a good friend of mine. He was a schismatic Episcopalian. But he wasn't called to perform. He and I talked quite often about it, and he did not like the idea of performing exorcism on people who were possessed, because that was not what he was called to do, which is mm-hmm. totally understand. Mm-hmm. But when someone tells me that they have, let's say, a demonic infestation issue, so I work with teams, paranormal teams, who are reputable, who don't go in, number one, who don't charge, who don't think everything is a demon, for the love of, that drives me nuts. All people are constantly walking in. Oh, you got a demon. You got a demon. And I'm thinking, where did you ever take your studies in demonology? I mean, how is it all of a sudden now you know there's a demon here, because you're going into someone's home and you're scaring them. Yeah. You're terrifying them because they see you as the expert. Mm-hmm. And so you walk into that home and you're saying, well, you have a demon and it wants to kill. Literally, I've had someone come in there and say, you have a demon in your home and it wants to kill your children. And they told this to the single mom who was legitimately terrified. Now, what do you do with that information? How do you fix that problem now? Because now you've yeah. really done some serious psychological damage to the mom, because she feels vulnerable because she doesn't know how to beat this thing. And she mm-hmm. wants to protect her children. And now you have clowns coming into people's homes and immediately saying you got a demon and it wants to hurt your child. That's yeah. really, that's very irresponsible. So mm-hmm. we have teams all around the United States that are, I absolutely consider them as far as experts, meaning they understand this as a ministry. They are pastoral. They do not charge. They do not think everything is a demon. They go in with the sole purpose of debunking. They mm-hmm. want to debunk, and it drives them crazy if they can't debunk it. And then they gather all the evidence. They present it to me and say, okay, Bishop, here's the deal. We've tried to debunk this. We can't. We don't know what's going on. This seems pretty legitimate. Then I get involved. But of course, that's a different situation if you're dealing with a demonic infestation, mm-hmm. if you're dealing with demonic oppression, or if you're dealing with demonic and certainly demonic possession. So it really just depends on the situation, because demonic infestation, you go in and you perform what is called the minor rite of exorcism. You do not perform an exorcism on a home. That's absurd. It doesn't exist. You mm-hmm. bless a home. You perform the minor rite of exorcism on the demonic entity that has infested itself within the home. So that requires less stringent activity as far as background activity, investigative activity. You still have to investigate to determine if the case, you know, if their claim is valid. But we don't require psychological evaluation for something of this nature. When you're dealing with someone who thinks they're possessed, yeah, now we're getting into psychological evaluations, medical evaluations, a whole mm-hmm. host of things before I even get involved.
So with the infestation, can you explain that in how it compares to the other types? Like what are some of the signs and how do they differ from each other?
Yeah, well, so for example, let's say that you have, demonic infestation. You go out and you paranormal investigate. Is there anybody here? Can you make a noise? Can you touch me? Can you push me? That's the invitation that a demonic needs. Now it has attached itself to you. You then go home. Now by that presence that you have an attachment, the demonic has infested itself within your home. So now you have infestation. So religious objects are desecrated, the smell of sulfur, animals will be terrified. You have this feeling that of dread. Sometimes you'll smell, it's a horrible putrid smell of rotten flesh. It's overwhelming. And many, many times religious objects will be desecrated. So it becomes violent. You'll hear knockings or bangings at times. It's very intrusive and it's frightening. And then what you have, what's called demonic oppression. But it's also with oppression. I knew Lorraine Warren and she was a friend of mine. I did not know Ed, but there's another stage with oppression. It's called demonic obsession. So let's say, for example, that you are the target of the demonic. And so the demonic will begin to attack you physically. That's called demonic oppression. It's trying to break down the will of the person. It's violent. And you're talking about past sleep deprivation. It's to the point where your immune is compromised. You are absolutely exhausted. It's biting you, scratching you, pinching you. It's terrifying you. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's physically assaulting you. And it's nonstop. It's constant.
That was my next question is, are these things, when they're presented, are they presenting constantly? Is there periods of like where there will be like almost like a quiet, and then it will kind of start back up?
Well, but you have to understand, demonic entities are, demons are opportunist. So they wait at the most opportune time to attack, because they exist outside of time and space. So waiting 5-10 years for them is the blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. So for example, what I mean by that is, let's say that your husband leaves you, your wife leaves you, your relationship is falling apart, your personal life is falling apart. You are just, you're in shambles. It's just the depression is setting in. That's when the demonic sees a perfect opportunity. When you're strong and ready to go, the demonic knows that that's going to be a strong battle to break the intellect and will down of the person. But when you go, when you're going through extreme emotional stress, anxiety, depression, whatever it is that life can throw at you, that's when the demon says, now that's an opportunity right there. And then it creeps in and it begins to attack you at your most vulnerable state. It's through oppression. So it's attacking you physically. And then at the same time, it's attacking you, what's called intellectually. So it's breaking your will down. It's breaking the intellect down. So you begin to hear it. It begins speaking to you. It mimics schizophrenia. It's breaking the intellect. It's making you feel you're going crazy. So you isolate yourself from your family, your friends, people who care about you, people who will protect you. And it's telling you to isolate yourself. And that purpose is to break the intellect and will down of the person to the point where they can no longer fight. They can't fight. And they are just at a point of beyond exhaustion. And then it goes into possession. And even with the possession, you have perfect possession, which is a person is in a possessed state all the time. And then that's very dangerous, because the body can only sustain so much trauma. And then you have what's called transient possession. And that's where the demonic will enter the body and leave at will, but it still attacks the person under the stage of oppression and obsession. You see when, and so that, again, it's very, Annalise Mikkel, the exorcism of Emily Rose, she suffered from transient possession.
That was going to be my next question. If you could provide us with maybe some more commonly known cases that would fit those criterias.
Yeah. You know, it was terrible, the situation with Annalise Mikkel. She was German, and she was a very, very devout, very devoted Roman Catholic believer. And that's fine. Again, people say, does it always have to be Roman Catholic? Does it? No, it does not. I mean, it certainly is anybody. I mean, the closer you get to God, the harder the devil works against you. But Annalise Mikkel, people know as Emily Rose, it was terrible what she endured. In 1973, things became a little bit disturbing. She actually became suicidal. She actually chastised all religious artifacts. And this was a person who was very devoted, and so was her family, to Catholicism. Mm-hmm. She drank her own urine. She began to hear otherworldly voices. And she actually had quite a few exorcisms performed on her. I do believe that with her, there was negligence. She was 68 pounds when she passed away.
Yeah.
And she died in malnutrition. She died of malnutrition dehydration, which I have a soundbite of Annalise Mikkel of one of her many exorcisms. And it is when I go to paranormal conferences, I play it so people can hear it.
It's terrifying.
It is now there are some YouTube videos that are fake.
That's probably what I've heard.
Yeah, there's quite a few out there that's pretty bad. I wish they wouldn't do that, but there are fake. But the ones that I have, actually, they are legitimate sound bites. And actually, there was a sound engineer that I had him listen to it, and I asked him if he can tell me how many vocalizations were at the same time. So in other words, if you're in a choir, you have a bass, a baritone, a soprano, singing all one tone. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, he was a sound engineer for some professional studio. And I said, can you tell me how many tones, if you will, are in this particular soundbite? He says at least minimum 32, perhaps 37, but there was between guaranteed 32 pitches at the same time. Now, Tibetan monks can do up to 3, and they train their vocalizations all their entire life.
Yeah.
And, So they were able to do up to three. But yeah, it was terrible what happened to Annalise. I think they should have stopped the rite, especially when they saw her become very dehydrated and malnourished. But her family just refused. They would not continue the medicine because they believed that the medicine that she was taking for her grand mal epilepsy was just simply not helping. Mm-hmm. And so they stopped. They stopped all medicinal purpose. They just did. They put their faith completely into the rite itself. But I do believe that the clergy should have said, you know what, we got to pump the brakes on this for a second because she's clearly deteriorating. And they didn't do it. And they should have.
Yeah, medical care. And then let's get her healthy. And then let's,
that's right.
We can get back to it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that kind of, you know, begs the question back to when this type of thing starts happening, because there's always the question of what is the difference between signs of possession and then evidence of poltergeist? Are they different? Mm. Are they the same thing? And what does that look like when it starts coming into somebody's life? I've heard a lot of, there's a weird pattern. It starts off very minimal until the person is used to it. And then more activity in bigger, bolder signs comes through until the person is used to it. And then it just kind of happens all at once. Is that true? Is there a pattern to that? Or,
well, see, I think poltergeist is seriously misunderstood in the paranormal community. I've worked quite a few poltergeist cases. And I can speak from a clergy's perspective. Poltergeist means noisy ghost, but it's not. I have not found it to be a ghost at all. At all. I've actually found it to be energy, negative energy that someone is omitting who is going through extreme emotional distress. So it could be an individual or individuals. So and I found it to be 100% of the cases that I work with poltergeist, 100. And I've also found that in not one of the legitimate poltergeist cases, not one time, has the minor rite of exorcism worked. It hasn't even worked. It had no effect, good or bad, increase the activity or decreasing the activity, which tells me as an exorcist that when you go into a place that has demonic infestation and you begin praying, that's mm-hmm. provocation. And when you mm-hmm. begin the minor rite of exorcism, the activity will increase and you will mm-hmm. see a dramatic increase. With poltergeist, nothing. There's no response at all. Nothing. And but it's energy. Think of it like this. You're walking down, I've talked about this before in other interviews, you walk down the street and someone's mm-hmm. walking towards you and you don't know that person, but you know you don't want to know that person. That's energy. That's negative energy. Or someone walks in a room. They don't have to say a word. When I was studying in the Roman seminary, I studied with the Benedictines and the Jesuits. And there was an older Benedictine monk. He would just walk in the room, wouldn't have to say a word. But his presence alone, you would just immediately be drawn to him and just watch everything he's doing or even mm-hmm. saying. I mean, it doesn't matter. He could just scratch his head. And you'd be thinking, wow, that positive energy. It's just really radiating amazing positive energy. So that's energy. And that's what poltergeist is. Actually, the number one form of destruction with poltergeist is fire. In every case that I've had. So either electrical appliances will be going off, light bulbs will be mm-hmm. popping, or electrical appliances will catching fire. So fire is the number one form of destruction with poltergeist. And here's what I have found. When you have the individual, and it takes a long time sometimes for them to trust you, because many mm-hmm. people don't want to open up and tell you, hey, look, yeah, we're having, you know, family issues or whatever it might be, because they become vulnerable and there's some very serious issues, you know, trauma. Mm-hmm. But once they tell you, yeah, I'm going through some really, really tough times, this is what's happening, or this individual in our family, you remove that person from the home, the activity will dramatically decrease. Now, you might have what's called residual energy, but it's very mm-hmm. limited, very, very limited. You bring that person right back into it. I mean, you have unbelievably crazy activity. And here's what's even more interesting. The person who's going through the extreme emotional stress, I've had cases where they were very devoted in their faith. And they mm-hmm. were very devoted even throughout the entire case. So they came home. They were still very devoted to their faith in Christianity. They weren't repulsed by religious objects. They were more than happy to be prayed over. That told me that this was not a demonic attachment. This was just someone who is omitting negative energy that's causing a paranormal activity to occur.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know a lot of that. And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because that was my next question, is having that activity, is it helping? Is it hindering? Is it doing nothing?
You mean the poltergeist?
Yeah. And well, the fire. Yeah. That was, I did not know that.
Yeah. It is. It's very destructive. And that's a symptom of the internal struggle that an individual or individuals are enduring. So it's very mm-hmm. important. I could perform a million minor rite of exorcism, a million, and it will do nothing at all. Absolutely nothing, not increase or decrease the activity at all. But once you get the person who is going through that extreme stress, once you get them the therapy, counseling that they need to reduce the activity, you'll see decrease dramatically. And so, wow. I look at it from, I have a master's of education, I have a master's of business. And so for me, I look at it from an analytical perspective, is when you analyze mm-hmm. it and say, okay, what's the bottom line? What's going to fix this problem? And in every single poltergeist case, 100% of them, once the individual got the emotional therapy that they needed, activity would decrease or stop altogether.
Now, I have a question for you as well. This brings to mind shadow people.
Mm.
How do they fit into all of this? I'm curious. You know,
shadow people, that's an interesting topic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
I've been to so many locations with shadow people. I live in Louisville. And so 35 years ago, I'm telling my age here, but 35 years ago, I actually investigated for the first time Waverly Hills.
I have Waverly. Been there as well. I can't wait to hear this.
It is. I'm telling you. First of all, so you've been there?
I have. Yeah, we did an overnight investigation. We booked the place, and I had this weird feeling that I needed to call. It was Tina Mattingly that owned it at the time.
Yep.
And I called her just to make sure that everything was reserved, because, you know, we put a lot of money down to have that, and they messed up our reservation, and they had a convention happening that weekend, and we weren't supposed to have been scheduled. And she's like, let me see what I can do. And she's like, once the convention leaves, you guys can come in and you'll literally have the entire building to yourself.
Yeah. Tina and Charlie Mattingly, I know both of them, and I think they're just great people. They I really do. And matter of fact, they have, from my understanding, that situation has been dealt with. And so everybody is happy. That's been Good. Settled. So yeah, Good. they're the owners of Waverly. Everybody is, from my understanding, that's all fixed.
That's good.
There we go. But you know what? Yeah. The shadow people is a crazy thing, because I've been in places where, they have had shadow people. Especially Waverly Hills. I mean, gosh. And I never felt threatened. I've seen many, especially when, you know, you see them break the grid there. A lot of people have the laser grids, and I've seen many times where they break the laser grid, but I didn't feel threatened. Now, there was one time that I was downstairs with a friend of mine. It was just us. And because he was on one of the board of directors. And so we were walking, and I felt like I was being watched. And that kind of made me a little uncomfortable, because actually it was summer outside, and they don't have air conditioning inside the building.
Right.
And we were walking, and it was cold. I mean, it was like someone had turned on the it was like 95 degrees outside. It was like someone had turned it on to 65. It was a dramatic temperature change. But I just felt like, okay, something was just saying, hey, it's time for you guys to go. You know,
now, this was first floor, right? First floor activity.
Yes.
That's what I remember and recall, is there was something too about she would have people take a glow stick down the hallway
mm-hmm.
and then turn around and come back. And all like that was the thing, is as soon as they turned around and started coming back, you would see the shadow people following them.
You can. It's amazing. Now, so I've been to Waverly where I've seen lots of shadow people, and I never felt really threatened. And then I've been to other locations where I've seen shadow people, and absolutely, you feel threatened. I mean, it was quite intense. So, I mean, when you work a demonic case, you'll never ever you can never forget that feeling. When you're in the presence of a true demonic entity, it's not something you can ever forget. I mean, your body kicks in an overdrive telling you it's time to go, run fast. But there have been quite a few places that I've been to where I did see shadow people, and I absolutely felt threatened. So it's interesting with shadow people. There's a lot of theories out there. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's just we can't narrow it down to one scientific explanation, because it appears that even demonic entities can manifest as a shadow person as well as a human spirit. So and even some people even say that we're going to go even further. Some people even say that even aliens can or Bigfoot. So there's so many arguments here as far as what shadow people are.
I've never had or heard anybody have a good experience.
Oh, really?
Connected to. Yeah. I mean, I actually know some people who personally had that something following them their entire life, and they had a very traumatic childhood. It seems like there's a lot of negative. I don't know if they feed off of the fear. I don't know what it is, but I was just curious if it fit into more of the line of like a paranormal or more of like the energetic. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think both, because it's unexplained. You know, we can't define it. We just simply, because as I mentioned, I've been to a lot of homes. I've been to homes where, you know, they didn't feel threatened, but they did see shadow people. And they sometimes would smell, you know, cigar smoke or a perfume or a cologne smell, but they didn't feel threatened. They just didn't want it there. They just felt, but it wasn't like a threat. So I've been to many people's homes. Yeah. I mean, you see the shadow. So I've been to many of those homes where I didn't feel threatened, and they were shadow people. So, but I've also been to locations, as I mentioned, I've been to many homes and, Bobby Mackey's with the Ghost Adventures and then, at the Exorcist house. I did Exorcism Live on the Travel Channel. That was, and then of course, I'm Eli Roth. So I'm on a brand new television show, called Eli Roth Presents Legion of Exorcists. It's coming out June 1st. So I'm a cast member, and we talked quite a bit about our experiences with shadow people. And it's interesting to have the diverse responses from the clergy.
I'm very excited for that. I know when we release this episode, we're actually going to wait until October to release this. But once we get to the end, we're of course going to ask, you know, some questions on where people can find out what you're doing. But we had read about that, so I'm very excited. Yeah. I think that's going to be fascinating.
He's a very cool guy. Eli Roth is a very, very nice person. Very quiet, like very reserved, which is quite interesting when you see some of his movies.
Considering.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Well, Blair, what do you think? Do you think we should get into the things that the meat of this episode?
Yeah, I agree. Sorry, I've also been trying to sift through our questions because we've been covering as we've been going.
Okay.
So our bigger questions for you, we've discussed signs of it happening, what precautions are taken to really truly understand if this is a possession or not, going through the steps of seeking, you know, mental health checks and whatnot. So when we come down to you're going to a session, if you're comfortable with sharing, what was it like during your first experience with an exorcism? What was your experience? How did it feel? What did you witness? What was it like for all of your senses? Were you questioning reality? Do you care to share? If not, that's okay.
As much as you're able to share, of course, with privacy and all of that.
Oh, sure, sure.
You know, I can't even imagine what would have been on your mind. Yeah. And also before, how long did you actually have to train to be able to do an exorcism?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to be a priest when I was 5. And I knew I wanted to be studied demonology. I began studying demonology at 9. And so for me, I have always, and I didn't really understand why. I just knew that I could not put the books down. It really became an obsession. I didn't understand it. But I knew that I had to continue to read it. That was just one of those things I could not stop. So I studied for the Roman Catholic priesthood, and I went to Loyola University in Chicago. So I studied with the Benedictines. Also studied with the Benedictines in the Benedictine College, and then Loyola University. So I studied with the Jesuits. Then went to graduate school. So I had a great opportunity to learn. Unbelievable amount of just a plethora of information with demonology, angelology, theology. Mm-hmm. That was quite intense. I would say probably my first exorcism was one I it's always an eye opener. It's I talked about that in the show, and I've talked about this before, but I was the assistant. I was not the primary at that time. I was the assistant. And it was a girl who had done some stuff she shouldn't have done in her, you know, her younger years. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time that I saw what I would describe as levitation. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a levitation that you see like on the Exorcist movie. It was a levitation where her body was flat and her, like this was her torso. And mm-hmm. she just went up just like a V shape, just like this. I mean, it was like someone had just taken a rope and just done like, and I heard her vertebrae crack and I thought she'd broken her back. I mean, but she just pushed up. Her knees weren't pushing up or anything. It was just like that. And that was the time when I saw her eyes. I will never, ever forget the blackness of her eyes. It was, I could see my reflection. It was like looking in a mirror. So during the rite, you lift the eyelids to find out where the person is during the stage and mm-hmm. a possession. And I lift the eyelids up and her eyes were solid black. And
is it her pupil expanding? Is that what's happening? Is like it's expanding out?
It's all black. There's everything. It is. It's like someone had put a black contact lens covering her entire eyes, but it wasn't a dull black. It was a shiny black. It was like a black mirror where I could see my reflection. And that was the one time in my life that I felt like prey. That was the most vulnerable experience I've ever had in my life. I couldn't walk. I couldn't talk. I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. I was stunned. It was just, I felt unbelievably vulnerable thinking, how in the heck am I going to, I couldn't even process anything except for I'm looking in the eyes of an apex predator and I know that I'm prey. Mm-hmm. And that was, I would imagine it's the same feeling that if you had a rabbit being cornered by a pack of wolves, knowing that there's no way out. It was just that type of feeling. And thankfully, the exorcist, the primary, pulled me back and we did a blessing and we continued. That was, you read about demon. I read about them all my life. I've studied demonology. I've studied what could happen. I've studied the voices. I've studied the language. But when you're there and you're actually in the presence of someone who is really possessed, everything that you know and everything you think you know is turned upside down.
Wow.
How does that affect you now? After even, I know you've done more, obviously. Mm-hmm. How does that affect you in day-to-day life? Has it really changed how you view the world?
Not so much of the world, because I know that ultimately when it comes to demons, God is far superior, mm-hmm. far more powerful. And we live in a society where I've talked about this before, where we're putting demons here and God down here. And I'm very troubled by that type of mentality. Because I tell people, the moment that you pray is the moment that demons begin to tremble in fear. And we think sometimes that we have to be the victims of demons. Well, if you're going to victimize yourself, then that's exactly what's going to happen. And they're going to mm-hmm. take credit for it. And so I that's my mantra every single day. I will not be your victim. I will mm-hmm. not be your victim. No matter what how they attack me, I'm just not going to allow that to occur. I'm not going to put my mindset in a victim mentality, because if I do that, then I'm oppressing myself. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing the work for them.
Right.
So for me, my faith is unbelievably strong because of what I've seen, but my faith was strong before it. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that once what's very, very interesting also, I performed 30 exorcisms on people who were validly possessed. And that's after a psychological evaluation, and clearly there's possession. But I will tell mm-hmm. you, I will say this, the moment that I bring this out, the rosary, the mm-hmm. moment that I bring the rosary out is the moment that I get the most aggressive reaction. In all 30 cases, I mean, a very aggressive reaction, which is says a lot. So, and of course, we call these are sacramentals of the church, mm-hmm. like the rosary or holy water or mm-hmm. incense, blessed oil. Those are all considered sacramentals of the church that we use, tools of the church that we use to combat evil. So I don't fear demons. Mm-hmm. However, I understand that they cause extreme anxiety and pain and suffering on people. And I acknowledge that. But that's what you have to work with people with, you know, when they're struggling with demonic infestation, oppression, or possession. You have to work with them about strengthening their faith. And because you have to have ongoing, especially after the event is over, you have to have ongoing psychological help for them. Mm-hmm. And spiritual help, because if you don't, then, you know, they can fall right into the trap of victim mentality.
Right.
I have a question for you, Bishop. Have you ever felt like you are being targeted by these things? Has anything ever affected you in your personal space?
Oh, sure.
What and to what extreme is that?
That was 420 pounds.
Okay, so you were dealing with...
I was dealing with... So if I was depressed, I went to chocolate or sweets. If I was happy, I went to sweets. If I was bored, I went to sweets. If I was lonely, I went to sweets. And it amplified that. It amplified that weakness times 100. When I did Exorcism Live with Chip Coffee on the Travel Channel in 2015, I was 420 pounds. And people, when I tell them, people, they're like, oh, no, you weren't. No, you weren't. But as a matter of fact, I'm looking for the picture now so I can show you a side-by-side. And that's when because the demonic was using my weaknesses as a form of control and manipulation to stop me from doing this ministry. But I had to get control of that, because if I didn't, I would have to have stopped. I would have to have said, okay, that's it. I'm going to have to retire, either retire and quit the ministry altogether, or I'm going to have to fix myself. Mm-hmm. And I took some time off, because if I hadn't, I wouldn't be here today. So, like, for example, this is when I did Exorcism Live.
Wow.
So that was 420 pounds compared to now.
Wow.
And it took a lot. The thing was, is when you're clergy, you want to help people. Mm-hmm. And I was dealing with so much demand for my time. And I tell people all the time, the hardest part of this ministry is not actually dealing with the demons. The hardest part of this ministry is when someone's talking to me on the phone and they're begging me, they're pleading with me, they're crying over the phone, please get here. And I can't, because I don't charge. I've never charged in over two decades and never will charge. I pay for it all out of my own pocket. So I got to rent a car or get a plane, or somehow I got to get there. And I don't get paid as being mm-hmm. clergy. So the church doesn't pay us. This is 100% free, this ministry. Mm-hmm. So I work. And so that money that I work, that I generate from that secular work, I have to pay for, you know, going to people's homes. Mm-hmm. So if someone tells me, look, I'm in California, or I'm in New York, or I'm in Texas, or whatever, that's the hardest part, is me having to tell a family, I can't get to you right now. I can't afford $1,500. Mm-hmm. I have to wait for a month or two and try to raise that money. That's the hardest part. So that was taking a toll.
Yeah.
Because it was interesting, because during that time I was slammed. I was slammed with people begging me to help them. And I kept telling people, I'm sorry, I can't. And that was taking a toll on me, because I felt like I was not doing what I was supposed to do. So that's the hardest part of doing this ministry.
Wow. How many people, you mentioned that there's like groups of exorcists and teams of exorcists. Mm-hmm. How many people are there in the U.S. that are legitimately doing this work?
Not many. And I say that because there's a lot of people who take advantage of people. And I think that's an abomination. There's a lot of people who go in and pretend to be exorcists and then put, videos all over YouTube. I find that to be an abomination.
And
not only that, yeah, but I think it invalidates their ministry. Mm-hmm. If anybody is going to go to your home, claim to be clergy, and perform an exorcism or deliverance on someone of your loved one, to put it on YouTube to get likes and get a check, I think that person really has invalidated their entire ministry. Mm-hmm. Because to me, I think that is unbelievably appalling That's why people say, well, why don't we ever see one of your exorcisms? You never will, because I want to get to heaven. That's my goal. My goal is to get to heaven. And I personally believe that if I go to someone's home and I take advantage of that person's suffering, spiritual, psychological trauma, and their family, just so that I can get a buck off YouTube, I truly believe I will lose my salvation over that. Because I think that's blasphemy against the Holy Spirit. That is making a mockery of this rite. And you never, ever will ever see. Those are sealed and they will never be opened. Now, there was a case where I was allowed to talk about it. The family said yes, that because they wanted me to educate people. And this was an incubus case. It was very violent.
I'm not familiar with any cases. So if you're willing to share what you're able to share.
Yeah, I can talk about this. As a matter of fact, I even had the daughter on. She's in her 40s. So I had her on to talk about the case. If she was in Tennessee, she was 68 years old. When I got involved with this case, the family had contacted me because I got to be very careful, because I don't know how many, what your audiences are children, or are they all adults?
No. They're all adults.
They're all adults.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have an explicit rating.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. This is a trigger warning for everybody. So everybody be aware. Yeah. This is her private area and her anal area had been ripped. And she described it as a plunger being violently assaulting her. And she would be on the bed. And she said that it was like 3 10-pound, but she would describe these as 3 10-pound dogs walking towards her. She could feel them walking towards her and then grabbing her and violently attacking her. Now, she underwent through hell. She had to stop driving. And what made this a very difficult case for me is I grew to deeply fall. I just fell in love with the family. Mm-hmm. She was just one of the sweetest people. She was like a grandma. She'd went, come on in, let me feed you. How are you doing? And she's just so full of love. She was an independent, strong woman, but she was just so full of love and so grateful that someone was willing to listen. And her family, her doctor actually contacted me and said, we have no explanation for this. So I got involved and I worked with her for 3 years.
Wow.
And that was the one case in my life where I thought about quitting, because it wasn't working. And I was doing everything that I was trained to do, and it wasn't going away. And I remember going to my mentor, he's an old feller, been in ministry for a long, long time. And I told him, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing this, I'm fixing this, I'm saying this. And then he said, boy, can you just get off the cross and let Jesus have a try? And I thought, now, wait a minute, Father, that's not very nice. That's not very nice. What do you mean by that? Come on. And he said, James, the problem is all I've heard you say is I, you're doing nothing. You're an instrument that God is using, and this person will be delivered in God's time and not yours. And if it takes 10 years, it takes 10 years, but you got to learn to humble yourself. And remember, it's not you that's expelling this demon. I needed to hear that, because the demonic was attacking my emotional attachment to the family, to her. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling very vulnerable, and almost to a point where I was just simply not worthy. At all, or trained, or there's somebody better out there that can do this more than me. And that was going through all my mind. I was really close to walking away, but I needed that swift kick in the rear end, which I'm grateful for. And, but her last year of her life, she was no longer assaulted, but she would sometimes feel the bedwalkers, but they didn't touch her anymore. And then when she passed away, her family asked me to preside at her funeral, which was emotional. So I've had her daughter come onto the show, and she talked about it, and it was terrible, because the family was told by clergy after clergy, we don't want to deal with you. Or they'd say, yeah, we'll come to your house, and they charge $800 or $1,000 and just take advantage, you know, do this hocus pocus magic nonsense. Mm-hmm. And just take advantage of these people. That's what they did. So
it makes you wonder why some people are targeted, like this person. I don't know anything about her, but from what it sounds like, she was a really wonderful person. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe the demons really enjoy ruining the lives of good people, and that's something that they really take pleasure in.
Well, it was black magic. It was interesting. because her daughter-in-law wanted her property. So her daughter-in-law wanted her out of her house because she had a nice house and she had a lot of property, and her daughter wanted it. And she's like, no, I'm not going to the nursing home. I'm not ready to go to the nursing home. You can't have my property. Mm-hmm. So she had cut a slice of her hair. And she said, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And she said, oh, you'll find out. And apparently after that, that's when all hell broke loose in her house. That's the only thing that I can come up with as far as explaining why she was attacked. That was the only way. There was no other explanation.
That makes sense. That's a perfect segue, I think, to you. Blair, you had some questions about cursed objects. And the Ouija board conversation, which we have very strong opinions about.
Yes.
I love to hear your opinions on that.
I will let you lead this.
Well, have you been noticing that curses or bad intentions toward an individual from somebody else has played a big role in possessions that you've seen?
Yeah, actually, curses is, the cases that I have worked, most of the cases, I'd say the majority of them, were not brought about by curses. It was actually brought about by invitation, accidental or on purpose. So that's what most of my cases were, because of either accidental or purposeful invitation.
So people dabbling in things like black magic and witchcraft and the Ouija board.
Yes. The segue.
That's right.
We are doing an entire episode. Blair is going to be covering an entire episode on Ouija boards and cursed objects. I think it might come out before this episode, but yeah, we will
potentially.
You take it away, Blair. I know you're cooking.
We've discussed that topic a lot, actually, and Hallie and I are both on the same page of, I don't want it in my home. Even if I'm not using it, I just don't want it. I don't want
to be around it. If somebody has one in their home, I don't want to step foot in that house.
Exactly. I have heard a couple of people in different interviews and in written articles that they take a scientific approach to just kind of analyzing Ouija boards and saying that really it's just a tool, and the people that use it, if you don't know how to use it, you know, what is a tool really going to do? If you don't know how to use a hammer and you break your finger, you know, that kind of thing. Do you think that that's the case? Is it a tool, or is it completely like, no.
it's don't divination. Touch it. Because here's the problem. Here's the problem with these people are not recognizing. Now, they're trying to say, well, it's just like a tool, like a digital recorder or any type of device that you use, that you hold. And that. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. Because with a digital recorder and with a digital thermometer, you're not asking the spirit to control your hand so that you can move the planchet. So don't give me that nonsense. You're asking a spirit to control your motor functions of your hand so that you can move this device around the board and then it can read it out. There's a big difference. So people try to use that nonsense and say, well, it's no. You're asking a spirit to control your motor functions. Don't give me that it is the same thing as using a digital recorder or digital thermometer. Oh, no, it is not. I disagree 100%. Anytime you give any type of spirit the invitation to control your motor functions, that's all it needs.
It's the invite. Right. That's opening the door.
It's absurd. And people always tell me, well, I've been doing it for 20 years and nothing has ever happened to me. And then I say, yet.
Right.
Because
it's only because a matter it's not, of time.
That's right. And it will happen when your wife leaves you, your husband leaves you, your significant other leaves you, you lose your job, your life is going to hell in a handbasket, and you're overwhelmed. And that's when the demon says, oh, by the way, remember that invitation that you gave me to use your muscular system to move the planchet? I think I'm going to take that invitation now. Yeah, and now there's
a whole new level.
Oh, of course. Right. And now there's the Holy Spirit board.
Oh, I'm not.
Haven't heard of that.
I'm telling you, you're going to absolutely, when you see this, I don't know about you, because I don't know, it's none of my business, but when I saw this, I was disgusted. I was disgusted.
I can't even wrap my brain around that.
So now, basically, what it is the Ouija board. but they're trying to say it's the Holy Spirit. You can use this board to communicate with Jesus now. So it's appalling.
Is it new?
It is appalling. Yeah, it just came out. Matter of fact, let me just, I can pull it up here. It is absurd, but that's what, and people are buying this and they're thinking that it's okay. They're thinking that it's okay because they're advertising as, well, it's the Holy Spirit.
That's a different
thing. You're communicating with the Holy Spirit. You're not communicating with something evil.
No, you're communicating with something that's pretending to be.
Yeah.
Please talk. Here it is right here. And so instead of the planchet now, so they have they have a cross, and it's the same principle, and but people are buying this, and they're buying into this. It is abomination.
Oh my
that's
gosh,
that's insane. And I feel like we had questions too about like the balance of good and evil in the world.
Yeah.
And like, yes. Is that tipping into a certain, does it have to stay in balance or what? Because that seems like another way for evil to get in is like under the guise of something that's supposed to be good. And it's just like basically more Ouija boards, just a different name.
Well, I'm very deeply concerned, and I've called people out and they don't like it, but I don't care. Now Satanists are saying, well, we don't worship Satan. Luciferians, well, you don't really worship Lucifer. Don't give me that nonsense. Don't put makeup on a pig and call it a cow. It is, if you're going to worship Satan, you're worshiping Satan. Don't sit there and tell me it's really an atheism. No, it's not. Then say you're an atheist. Mm-hmm. But don't sit there and tell me you're a Satanist and use Satanism, because they actually recently, just in Boston, had the National Convention of Satanist Convention. Do you know that?
No.
You might want to look that up. They just recently in Boston, it was the National Satanic Convention. And they had people go into this because everybody was saying, oh, we don't worship Satan. No, no, we don't do that. However, there were some reporters that went in there and people were going in, hail Satan, hail Satan. They were chanting demon names. They were summoning demon names. So it's like, now, wait a minute. If you're not worshiping Satan, then why in the hell are you sitting there, hail Satan, and actually summoning demons? You're a liar. You're a deceiver. And that's what's happening now. They're calling themselves Satanists. But then, oh, no, 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 no. It's all about bettering yourself. It's about helping other people. No, that's called Christianity. If you follow Christianity and Christ teaching, because that's what Christ taught, to love one another, to share and to help one another. That's what's Christianity. So don't sit there and try to steal the Christian tenets of life and then call yourself a Satanist and try to pass that off that you don't worship Satan. You know what? If that's the case, then I'm the Pope.
Yeah.
So the problem is there are Satanists going around trying to redefine themselves. And again, I have friends from all walks of life. I have friends that are atheist, agnostic. I have friends that are Satanist. I have friends that are Muslim, that are Jewish. However, I don't have to agree with their beliefs. And I don't like this rebranding themselves and redefining themselves to make them more appealing. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're attacking Christianity, saying how Christian is so terrible because Christians attack people and judge. And I understand people turn away from the Christian church because of their experience maybe with a bad pastor. Mm-hmm. I understand that. I get it. However, what the Satanists are doing is jumping on top of that and utilizing the emotional trauma that came with a pastor that should have had no business being a pastor in the first place, and turning people away and spreading lies and convincing people, oh, Satanism, oh, we don't worship Satan. Yes, you do. Don't you're a liar. Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It definitely feels like there's something is going on in the world, especially, I don't want to use the C word, but since COVID, it seems like it's even more extreme, and I don't know.
We call it cafeteria religion. I'm just concerned with so many people. So many people are, and I understand people. Well, I'm not spiritual, but I'm religious. I get that term, but remember, religious people hated Jesus too. As a matter of fact, they crucified him. So, but there's a difference between man's law and Christ's law. The Christ that I am in love with, that I teach about, is a Christ that defended the prostitute, defended the lepers, defended the children, the drunkards, the people that were outcasts, that he gave them a voice. They were the voiceless. And that's what I think Christianity has lost. Because so many people want to use the pulpit as a scare tactic to judge and condemn and tell everybody they're going to burn in the fiery pits of hell. And they're creating this identity of Christ that I'm like, I don't know that Christ. I have no idea. That Christ is not the Christ that I worship. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening is they're jumping on many of these groups are jumping on these fake preachers who are preaching fire, hell, and damnation, which I believe in heaven and hell, but mm-hmm. I don't believe in a Christ that is hateful, that is condemning. I believe in a Christ that loves all of us. Mm-hmm. And people are turned away from Christianity because of what the disgusting behavior of preachers who preach what's called the prosperity gospel, which mm-hmm. is heretical. Prosperity gospel is when a preacher says, the more money you give a ministry, the more God is going to bless you. That is heresy. Mm-hmm. That is heresy. That is not biblical. God doesn't give a damn how much money you give up a ministry. God's going to bless you because you're a child of God. So, and they make you think that you have to put more money in the plate in order for God to bless you. That is a lie. That is the devil speaking. Remember, the devil can quote scripture too. Mm-hmm. So any preacher who sits there and preaches, oh, you got to give more money. You got to give more. People are turned away. They're turned off on that. And I understand that. I get it. Yeah. I would be too, because it's right. all about money and power, and that's not Christianity.
Yeah,
exactly.
One quick thing too about the cursed objects. Yes. Kind of to get back to that. Blair, you go for it.
We were actually just talking about this before you got on. When it comes to cursed objects, we were talking about Ed and Lorraine yep. just before this, and they had their basement that was full mm-hmm. of items that they had taken, and they had somebody come in and bless them regularly. Do you think that it's something to where inanimate objects can be possessed? We were talking
not
about,
okay. possessed. People are possessed, but you have objects have an attachment. So demons can mm-hmm. use and manipulate objects, but all mm-hmm. the possession, the point of possession is the destruction of the body, because the body is mm-hmm. the temple, the living temple of the Holy Spirit. We are mm-hmm. created in the image of God, not objects. So the desecration of objects, it would be irrelevant. That would not be the point of a demonic entity. So, mm-hmm. but they will use objects certainly to entice us to then get. So for, I have a pretty large collection of haunted items that I have removed from people's homes. I don't have it in my home. I have them in the storage home, in the storage facility, because people purchase these things, and I don't leave them alone. Leave them alone, for the love of yeah. God. Matter of fact, I can't talk a whole lot about it, but on the presentation on the show that's coming out, mm-hmm. I talk about one particular doll that a family purchased, and when I tell you all hell broke loose, as a matter of fact, it caused a massive fire. Because I've talked about this before, but not only did it do it, when I brought this doll to Louisville Mid-South Paranormal Conference in Louisville, Kentucky, a room full of people was there. I was talking about the dangers of collecting these items, and I had it in a protective case, and people were like, oh, please take it out. Please take it. Normally I would never do it. But so I said, okay, fine. So I took it out and I showed it. No one wanted to touch it. They didn't want to be around it. Well, a firefighter was sitting in the front row. And I was going to put it back in its place. So I turned around to put it back in its box, and someone asked me a question, and I got distracted, and I put it right next to my laptop, a laptop that I've been saving for a long time because I needed to update my laptop. And mm-hmm. I put it next to my laptop, and I didn't put it back in the case. I turned around and was addressing the question, and the firefighter said, screaming, Bishop Long, look behind you. I turned behind me. The laptop was on fire.
This was
actually witnessed by an entire room full of people. And when that happened, I had always heard about, you know, people have always talked to me about that. But when I saw that, I mean, the laptop caught fire. It was on mm-hmm. fire. That's when I thought, oh, you know, this stuff is not make-believe. This is serious stuff.
Yeah.
And so that was my, I guess, introduction to the reality. These things are not to play with. So I have, matter of fact, I do have these. These are in a protective case. A family brought these, and I don't know why the heck they would buy them, but these are real. These are originals, and they're very, very rare. They're hard to find, but you'll see this.
Oh.
If you look closely, the signature there, and then
no.
And then here's this. Here's another one.
I know who that is, Blair. Do you know who that is?
But, no. but you'll know this.
I know. And
this
who
is this
it is.
Is it. This is an original.
Is it the clown? Oh no! Do you know who it is now?
Yes, I do.
I got goosebumps because I saw.
So there's the signature, John Wayne Gacy, and on some of the red on the clown, what he would do is poke his finger, and he would actually put some of his blood to curse the actual object itself. He was a sick person, so the family actually brought these items home, and oddly enough, activity was occurring in their home, and they couldn't figure out why. It's like, well, what do you think? And so, I had to perform the minor rite of exorcism there and remove those items. But yeah, I take these to sometimes the paranormal conferences, and I share with some of the items that I have. And I'm like, leave these things alone. There's nothing good that's got. A lot of people are collecting them. Leave them alone.
Yeah. So something negative is attaching itself to those objects, and then it's manipulating people, is what you're saying.
It's enticing. It almost gets to a point where the person becomes obsessed.
Obsessed. That was the word.
I mean, it is like they got to have it. They can't. It is an unhealthy obsession, and that's that enticement. And you collect it. I have some things that are even more. I mean, some things that will just make. I mean, give you goosebumps. I mean, really, really. There's one particular item that I have that is human hair. It covers. Have you ever seen the wig, like a where you put your little thing on the wigs? I don't know what they call them. A wig holder.
Like the mannequin heads.
Yeah, they're like a mannequin head. Yeah.
Yeah.
The entire mannequin head is actually filled with human hair all around it, and it has these really really dark eyes. And apparently, there was some voodoo that was done on this thing for the person to live through this item, and this person brought it He just found it on his doorstep, and because he sold in New Orleans, he kind of sells unique things like this, and he brought it and he put it right there in the display, and no one would go into his store. His store was busy, but as soon as he put that in there, no one, I mean, he didn't have one customer for 2 weeks, not one customer. And so I have this item, and I'm telling you, I've never seen something this creepy, but it's a creepy item.
Oh my gosh. Wow. No, thank you. Yeah.
So is there a way to, and I know we talked about that where, you know, they would come in to bless Ed and Lorraine Warren's basement. Is there a way to get rid of items like that safely? Or is it just kind of there now and you have to store them away?
You really need to give them to clergy. Don't burn them. You need to give them the clergy. Clergy will properly bless them, seal them. And that's why I do this. I take it from people. It would be a lot less costly because then I wouldn't have to have a storage facility. I have a storage facility strictly for these haunted items. So I don't sell them, never will sell them. I'm not ever going to sell these items. And so, but I do teach about them because it's important for me to say, hey, look, you need to know that this is what happened in this family. And I have lots of Ouija boards. I have old Ouija boards that people have left that have said, that's it. We're done with it. I have a lot of satanic rituals, knives, or whatever they call it, the daggers that they used for animal ritualistics, rituals. I have a skull, an animal skull. I mean, I have a satanic altar that they actually used at one of the cemetery. It's pretty dark stuff there.
That's crazy. I guess the other question we could cover just about that topic before we move on, there's two more questions, but Hallie and I were discussing this also before you jumped on. We were talking about the percentage of animal possessions. Is it possible? I know that in the Bible, there is the story where it was cast out into pigs and they went over the cliff. So how is that done? Is it something that happens?
Right. Yeah. And that's in, we're talking about Matthew chapter 8, verse 28. And the reason being is because they knew that Jesus, they recognized Jesus as the judge, the Messiah. And they—that's why they said, you know, do not, you know, we are many. They said that we are many, yeah. and they begged Jesus not to send them away mm-hmm. to eternal fire, to the lake of sulfur. And they actually said, let's just throw us into the swine instead. Well, mm-hmm. the swine were filthy, considered filthy animals, very yeah. filthy. And so in Revelation, it actually talks about that in the end, they will be judged and thrown into the lake of sulfur. So mm-hmm. they were just trying to put off the inevitable and to be mm-hmm. thrown into the swine, which were filthy, unclean animals. That was the point of the story. Mm-hmm. But I have had cases before where a family had a demonic infestation, and the demons seemed to attack also the dogs. I've had cases where the dogs passed away, got very, very sick, very healthy dogs. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they had demonic infestation, it was violent. It was not a pleasant thing that they went through. It was unbelievably violent. And that's the point of destroying the person's intellect and will, because mm-hmm. you're seeing something, you're seeing your fur baby, you know, have seizures and regurgitate violently. And you're mm-hmm. seeing them having these horrible attacks, which they've never had before. And they were never diagnosed with any type of brain tumor or anything. Mm-hmm. And it happened, and it's happened before, and it breaks your will down. So yes, I have seen mm-hmm. demons will attack animals. And but they primarily attack them to use as another means, as a pawn, if you will, okay. in a game of chess right. to attack mm-hmm. the owner. So
right,
that's what I
break.
Found.
It would break you to see your animal suffer.
Of course,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, certainly, it certainly yeah. would me, because when I had animals, I mean, they were my fur babies.
They're
and,
family, yeah,
they
yeah.
are
family for yeah. sure,
definitely. The last question that we have regarding, influences with that kind of thing, cursed objects and what have you. We've definitely seen you on TikTok, looking at videos to see, you know, is this truly a possession or not? Is this a hoax, etc. Mm-hmm. Do you think, and this came in from one of our listeners, do you think that, let's say you're watching a YouTube video and it's something along the lines of watching an exorcist, as we know, I'm air quoting for listeners right now, or just a situation in general, could the viewer potentially get possessed through just watching a video? Is it kind of like a cocktail, like we were talking about? If they're going through some really bad things in their life, is it just the right amount of exposure for that to yeah. happen?
You know, it's really interesting, because this is, you know, what you're dealing with modern technology, where it never existed prior to, you mm-hmm. know, 1990s and 2000s. And so this is kind of a new revolutionary idea of how can the demons now use technology for the purposes of influence, mm-hmm. which really hasn't, there's some debate on that in a lot of the theological, I guess, circles of, you know, of people who are studying this. It does appear certainly that demons are utilizing our technology for their benefit. We certainly see this with cameras, and other devices that can capture something that these EVPs, the digital recorders for that, or just mm-hmm. or I've seen so many cases where they had a baby monitor and activity will occur, and you're like, that's an interesting video there. That's one of those things that makes you scratch your head and say, that could be legitimate. Mm-hmm. So we are seeing the demonic are able to. So can they use technology for their benefit? Absolutely. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's why I tell people, you don't need to watch movies where if mm-hmm. they do any type of summoning, stay away from it. There's nothing mm-hmm. good. There are actually movies where they are summoning demons, and yeah. they do chants. There's movies out there where they convince you that you can have a buddy as a demon mm-hmm. and all this other nonsense. Stay away from those movies will do nothing good, and stay away from watching YouTube videos of people claiming that they're performing exorcisms. Just mm-hmm. simply don't watch them. Because number one, most of them are fraud. Mm-hmm. Number two, it's misleading people. And it certainly is. I'm absolutely convinced that anyone who places, you know, performing exorcism on people on YouTube, I have a real hard time accepting that as being guided by the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't watch exorcism movies. I have watched the Father Amorth, the Pope's exorcist. I wanted to see how they portrayed that
recently too.
So I wanted to see that for, but I don't go on YouTube. I don't watch, mm-hmm. I don't like watching these things because yeah. I just find them not really worthy of my time, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to like or show a view of this person taking advantage of someone's suffering, whether it be mental mm-hmm. illness or an actual possession.
Right.
Do you believe that people make soul contracts? I know that a person doesn't technically own their soul because it doesn't belong to them, but you know, you hear stories about people that just randomly get really famous and rich. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the old story about the blues singer Robert Johnson and the Crossroads. Is that, have you heard of something like that ever happening? And if so, how do they break the contract?
I absolutely am convinced that does happen. And that is blasphemy against the Holy Spirit. And in the Catholic tradition, we only say that the only way that you're going to have that removed is through the sacrament of reconciliation, because that would be considered a mortal sin, mm-hmm. in which you purposely remove yourself from God's grace. And I encourage you. It's a very interesting story for those of you who may not know, but the Devil's Bible. If you don't know this, this is pretty interesting. I've read it extensively, and I can't. From a logical, analytical perspective, if your folks read it's very strange about how this happened. It's a giant codex. It was created in the 13th century in a Benedictine monastery, actually, which was really interesting. And so you'll have to watch it. You'll have to take a look at it and read it on yourself. But it was created very quickly, by an alleged monk who mm-hmm. was going to be put to death. And allegedly he sold his soul to the devil. And it's pretty crazy if you haven't read it.
Is that something that's safe to read?
Yeah, that was my question.
Well, I mean, I would you're not gonna, unless you know Latin. But you can certainly read about it. And you know, because basically what happened, the story is, you know, a Benedictine monk. I'm a Benedictine, so Benedictines are rather strict. but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But he was sentenced to be walled up alive, put in a wall.
Oh my God!
Because he broke his vows. That's and so what he did, you know, he went to the abbot and he said, "Look, I'm going to promise you something. In one night, I'm going to create a book. It would include all human knowledge, give you everything. I mean, you'll have all the information you'll possibly know, and in one night." And so the abbot said, "Okay, fine." And it was interesting. It was 620 pages, 620 pages. And it's 3 feet from the top of the spine to the bottom. It's huge, and it's perfectly written. It's beautifully written, actually. And so when you because I've read it, and there's a lot of interesting. It's like, wow, how could you possibly have done this in one night?
That short time, yeah. How many pages do you have to write in that short amount of time? It doesn't add up.
Yeah, it's almost, it's nearly impossible. Well, it is impossible. It's not nearly impossible. It is, and there are sites online that you can actually look it up, and you can read it. I've read it, but you know, it's pretty fascinating. It's called the Devil's Bible, so you might want to take a look at it. So, yeah, but it's beautifully written. I mean, the penmanship is beautiful. This is not something that was rushed. And so allegedly he made a pact with Satan to save his life. And he went into this trance and he wrote this this book, The Devil's Bible. And you can go online and actually see the calligraphy. I mean, it is just remarkable. And I, for one night, a person could not have done that. It just, something happened. So yeah, yeah. I do believe you can make a pact with the devil and you can remove yourself from God's grace because we do have free will. Mm-hmm. So.
Do you think that, and this may be a really dumb question, that the devil presents himself in human form?
The devil presents himself in many forms and it takes on many images. And matter of fact, in incubus cases, it's interesting, incubus and succubus cases, what happens is it starts out not violent at all. It starts out pleasurable. So the activity becomes sexual in nature, but it's not a violent, aggressive. It only becomes violent and aggressive when you say, okay, this is enough. Stop it. I've had it. Then the gig is up. And then it presents itself. That's where the old hag syndrome, what a lot of people talk about with sleep paralysis comes in. Mm-hmm. You actually see then this image, this ghastly image that many people describe. Annalise McKell described seeing these ghastly images as well. So then you actually see the image itself. So I think it presents itself in many forms, many. Beautiful. I think it presents its form in false prophets. Scripture talks about that. And many of these preachers who are preaching fire, hell, and damnation, you're going to burn in the fiery pits of hell if you're this or X, Y, Z, because we don't like this group, we don't like that group. Like, shut up, you know. I follow two commandments. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and body, and love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, it's not that much more complicated than that. People want to get me in debates with me on my TikTok when I do, and I'm like, I'm not getting into debates with you. I'm just not going to do it. You're not going to talk. You're not going to get me to talk about political hot topics. I'm here to welcome everybody, no matter who you are. I'm not going to judge you any more than I want you to judge me. Mm-hmm. I don't know why people, why it's so complicated.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. I do have another question about the good versus evil, which we touched on a little bit. And since you had brought up John Wayne Gacy, I've always questioned the influence of the demonic on people who commit heinous acts like school shootings. And I've even read interviews where they talked about Ted Bundy, that his eyes would go all black when he would talk about his crimes with interviewers. And you know, one of the scientific things is that a state of arousal will do that. Mm-hmm. So, but to me, it just seems like there may be cases where that they are being influenced. And I just, it's sometimes hard to wrap your brain around that somebody can do terrible things to people without being influenced by something evil. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is interesting. I think John Wayne Gacy and I think Bundy, could they be demonically influenced? Absolutely. Sure. That would fall under ordinary demonic activity because there's ordinary and extraordinary. And so ordinary demonic activity, I think, will amplify the sins that you do or the lust or the power or something like this. So through temptation. So no question about that. But the thing is they remember what they did. They were in full control.
The significance is hugely significant.
Hugely, because a person is possessed, in at least in the Roman Catholic Church, in all the 2,000 year history in the Roman Catholic Church, a person who's possessed has no knowledge. They don't remember being possessed. They go into a catatonic state. They remember what led up to possession, but they don't actually remember being in the state of possession, unless the demonic enter, that's transient possession. Then in those cases, yeah. But I think maybe Jeffrey Dahmer, certainly there was possible. Yeah, because he had blacked out one time. He had that he was so intoxicated and he went to a hotel woke up the next morning. Yeah, and that person's chest was caved in. He said he has no memory of it. Now, could that be? It was certainly could, but he also loved, he had a ritual of watching The Exorcist 3 before he would actually, matter of fact, his last victim who escaped, he was watching Exorcist 3, this particular scene. And the guy said, look, you know, let's stop, you know what? And he said, no, let's hold on. I got to watch this one part. And there's one particular part that really got him almost in a trance. And then he laid the guy back and he said, I'm going to really enjoy eating your heart. And so But from my understanding, I think Jeffrey remembered that, but he had to get into a trance and to watch The Exorcist 3 before he did it.
That is insane. Yeah,
it is. It is.
That's a good point. I do remember him saying that, and that he did blackout during those times, or so, at least that one in particular.
So it's quite possible. It's quite possible that time that could have been transient possession. But no question, I think, under demonic influence. No doubt about that. I mean, I think that's definitely very, very safe to say. Yeah.
Well, Blair, do you think I should tell him about my strange occurrences?
I think you should.
In doing my research on this topic?
Yeah, I think you should.
So why is it that people tend to have strange things happen when they're digging into, like for me, I was researching an episode that I'm writing for October on possession, specifically the Ronald Hunkler case. Mm-hmm. And while I was writing this, I was actually to the point where I was writing about one specific exorcism event, and my light on my desk came on. And the light requires me to use a remote. So that happened. And then the next 2 days, I woke up in the morning both times at 3:33, which I don't know. I know that there's something with that. And then I think Blair even had a nightmare the first night. And she was so shaken up by it that she called me.
Yeah.
And she's like, I think we should probably stop.
Like not do
digging into this. Or, you know, put it on the back burner for a while, not do it. And then today, when you messaged me to confirm our appointment on my phone, I could see, you know how when you see that you have a message and you start to pull that, it'll show you like a preview of the message, but then you have to click on the person to pull up the message.
Right.
I kept clicking on it and it would not pull open your message. And my keyboard on my phone, the letters like, you know how when you touch a letter, it will like expand?
Right.
Multiples of them popped up and I had to shut my phone off and turn it back on. And I don't have phone issues. And I've had weird tech issues and just have heard other people having these strange experiences when they're looking into this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do we protect ourselves, first of all? Because I don't want anything to happen to me because I'm digging into this subject. I don't want to put myself at risk. Just curious on your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, it's interesting to say that because when you're exposing the truth, the closer you get to God, the harder the devil works against you. And you grow closer to God by exposing the truth in demonology and possession. And so these things will occur. And so anytime you're exposing the truth on demons, that's the last thing that they want. Especially, you know, they don't want that. They don't want information being spread about that. They are parasites. They are cowards. However, they cause extreme havoc on people's lives. And they will do anything that they can. If they see you as a threat, see your voice as a threat, then they will certainly do everything they can to intimidate you, to try to stop it. Now, the thing is I won't allow my mind to go into the mentality of I'm a victim. Mm-hmm. Won't do it. So I matter of fact, that's my mantra when it comes to demons. I will not be your victim. I will not be your victim. I don't care. I don't care if it's 420 pounds. I don't care if I lose my car. I don't care if I lose my house. I don't care if I lose my job. I will not think demons. Mm-hmm. I just don't do it. No matter what. My mind just doesn't go there. Because the moment that you do, you victimize yourself. And then the moment you do that, now you're victimized. And then they victimize. They take credit for it. Because many times we say, you know, because of that. And it may be, but I just don't acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. Because the more you acknowledge it, then the more that they feed on that fear. And you cannot allow them to feed on that fear. Because that's all this is a form of intimidation, even in exorcisms, levitation, screaming in multiple pitches, mimicking the voice of deceased loved ones, a term called retrocognition of knowing your sins, throwing their voice to where it actually sounds like the voice is wondering. In the room, the black eyes, all of those, those are parlor tricks to frighten you, to intimidate you. And so you just don't allow that to hurt. You just do not allow that to happen. You don't, as scripture says, don't give the devil a chance to work on you, and you don't. And so you just, if things happen, I don't even acknowledge it.
So for someone like me, what is the best way for me to like take a situation like that? Because it did make me afraid. I'll be honest. It was very strange. And like today I was like, I wanted to make sure I got your message because I didn't, you know, we had some like weird things. Like, I know you weren't getting my messages for a while. And it's like, what is going on? And why are we not able to get this on the books? And then today I'm like, I'm so afraid I'm not going to be able to respond, you know? And so finally it worked, but it's like, what can I do? Because I did feel fearful and I don't want something to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always tell people when you have this, you know, you call upon your guardian angel, you call upon St. Michael, and you call upon God. And you know that the moment that you do that is the moment that, as I mentioned earlier, is the moment that demons tremble in fear. Because if you know that and you absolutely are convinced of this and you know that they are cockroaches, you know that they're parasites, you know that they're cowards, they're not going to fight you when you're strong. They're going to fight you when you're weak because they're cowards. And so I am not intimidated by, I'm not afraid of dying. I have no fear of death. So a demonic has nothing over me because they can't use death to frighten me, to cause destruction, to make me think, oh, what am I going to, I don't fear it. And so I just don't acknowledge it. And, you know, there's a short form and the longer form of St. Michael. And I always tell people, you know, there's a shorter form prayer. It's not very long. You know, St. Michael, the archangel, defend us in battle, be our protection against the malice and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him. We humbly pray and do thou, Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the power of God, cast into hell Satan and all of the spirits who wander the earth seeking the ruin of souls. Now, I've said that so many times, obviously, you know, I just spit it out, but I pray it all the time. I pray it all the time, not because I don't want to put myself in a victim state of mind, because I know that I can call upon prayer. I also pray the rosary. And so for me, I use my faith, and I realize that, and I truly believe that when you pray, they tremble in fear. So we cannot keep demons here. We got to stop that. The demons need to be elevated exactly where they are. The cockroach, the low lives that they are, because we have to keep God here and we have to put demons way down here. And there's such an imbalance lately because everybody, demons, it scares people. And I understand that. Well, they're scared of God. And they're scared of you because you're a child of God. And that's what intimidates them.
Blair, do you have any last thoughts or questions before we wrap up? Anything you want to ask?
No, not really. We covered everything.
We covered a lot.
There's a lot to it, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I don't know. I like that you said that at the end, because I like to think of it as when you think of just like your average day-to-day life, demons are just the biggest bullies you're going to come across. And if you don't give bullies the time of day, then they don't have any power over you.
That's exactly right. And they don't. And you just don't victimize yourself. Don't do it. So if you feel that you're being attacked, no, I have no fear of demons. I don't fear cowards. They should fear you. You shouldn't fear them.
If people are really in dire situations and dealing with things that are obviously beyond all reasoning and are seeking help, what do you recommend that they do?
Well, I always tell people they really need to reach out to the clergy. And that's the first. I mean, if they have no clergy, then I would definitely, you're going to have find clergy that can assist you, that's more open to it. That's the problem. There's not a whole lot of us out there that are legitimate and don't want to sensationalize your case so that we can make a buck off of you. That's that's hard to find. I have, this is my ministry email.
8,000.
So I have 8,794 emails of people asking me to come to their home. I have over 14,000 messages
of assistance.
I have over 14,000 messages on TikTok, and I have over 900 messages on Messenger. So, and I am the staff. So that's the problem. It's just, you know, but you know, reach out to people who are doing this for the right reasons, and then hopefully they'll get a teams out there and then help. And don't ever just simply don't go to people who's going to charge you. Just mm-hmm. don't go to yeah. go to people who truly are doing this for the ministry for the right reasons. And I understand why people charge. I get it. They pay the expenses because I get it. None of us have won the lottery. But there's a big difference between, you know, reimbursement for expenses and charging people an exorbitant amount of money. That's not the same thing. Mm-hmm.
Capitalizing on someone's suffering.
Right.
You mentioned that there aren't a lot of people that are ordained and have the right to do this. Are we talking like less than 100 people in the U.S., less than 50 people?
Well, I don't know the exact numbers as far as in the Roman Catholic Church, how many there are. But I certainly think that there's not a whole lot. There really are. Mm-hmm. There's not. Because there's a difference between a deliverance and the solemn rite of exorcism. A deliverance is performed, you pray over an individual who has a demonic attachment. So the demonic has attached to that person. You pray a prayer of deliverance. And the laity can do this. You can pray over a person anytime. So that's not an issue. Because there's several types of exorcisms that we've already talked about. Primarily, there are two types of exorcisms on individuals. There's what's called supplicating exorcism and imperative exorcism. And a supplicating exorcism is a prayer directed towards God, and we're asked to bring relief to that person. So that's known as a deliverance, and that a laity can do this. You can pray over anybody. Now, an imperative exorcism, that is when you are commanding in the name of Christ. You are in persona Christi. You are standing in the personhood of Christ, commanding this demon leave the person. That's a sacred rite, and that is reserved for people who are validly trained, who have apostolic succession, whose bishop has given them permission to perform the rite.
Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. For our listeners, where can they learn more about you? How can they donate to the ministry to support you and the work that you're doing? What is the best avenue for our listeners to find out more?
Yeah, I'm not really interested in donation. If you want to go to thebishopjameslong.com, you can do that. You can go to the website. You can go to the church's website, usocc.org, and you can do that as well. And then, of course, on TikTok, Bishop James Long is the TikTok username.
And you're on there very regularly as well. I don't know how you do all that you do, to be honest.
Well, Sundays and Wednesdays, matter of fact, as soon as I get off here, we have Bible study. So Sundays and Wednesdays, we have Bible study. And then on Fridays, we have the paranormal. And then on Saturdays, it's open mic. We just talk about anything. So people are asking me to go every day. No, absolutely not. Not going to happen. I'm not going every day. The 4 days a week is enough. That's all I can do.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much for your time.
We really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Sure. I know that you're a very busy man, and we appreciate all that you do and taking the time to kind of raise awareness and clarifying some of those misconceptions. So we greatly appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and we look forward to seeing your upcoming, by the time this episode airs, it will already be out with Eli Roth. You said that's going to be on what network?
Travel Channel. Travel Channel, I think Channel. Discovery Plus, and there's some other ones. So.
Okay, perfect.
I can't wait.
Well, thank you so much.
It's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be good show. Looking forward to it.
You take care, and have a wonderful rest of your evening. Thank you so much.
All right, you guys have a great night.
What a crazy episode.
Yeah. I don't know about our listeners, but that was an intense episode. There was a lot of information.
I would have loved to. I could have literally talked to him for hours and hours.
Oh, same. Absolutely.
Easily. I have so many questions. I actually have more questions now.
I absolutely do too. And I mean, if this doesn't scream Halloween, and if this doesn't spook you, then I don't know what does, wow, he's so knowledgeable too,
and so nice,
and he's so down to earth, and it was just an absolute pleasure to talk to him and to just kind of dig into this topic, because there is a lot of, you know, fake stuff out there. There's a lot of stuff that, I mean, in movies, a lot of people think, oh, well, you can call on a priest if something's weird happening. You can go in and in 15 minutes, you're done.
You're
rid of, yeah. And that's not the case. This is something that lasts years, where you have to have multiple consultations regularly to try to get rid of this thing.
Well, and I like that he was vulnerable too about the case where he almost quit.
Oh, yeah.
That's like a reality check, you know?
Exactly.
But yeah, so listeners, happy spooky season. And yes,
we are in the spooky season.
We've got a few more coming out towards the end of the month. But yeah, this is our special bonus episode. We hope that you enjoyed it. If you love this episode, please leave us a stellar rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you listen. It will certainly help our show grow. And we'd love to do more things like this.
Yes.
But yeah, thanks for sticking this one out. It's a little bit creepy. Say your prayers tonight.
Yes.
Or today, if you're listening to this, say your prayers if you feel spooked out. I know that I'm probably going to do a little something tonight because it's been a kind of a weird day.
Absolutely.
leading up to this. but yeah.
Yes. And
that's it for this episode of Macabre. We will see you next time.
Until then, have fun. Be safe. Happy Halloween.
Bye.
Bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.